obviously there are poor Latinos as well, and we really want to be the voice of the people in the truest sense. So we're not going to say, oh no, we're only for the indigenous people. And, you know, it's important to remember, really, that most of the wealth of our country is maintained in the hands of a very few, so that actually there's a lot more in common between the Latinos and the indigenous people. Anyways, you've been listening to an hour of Sferio, the local voice of your hemisphere, our hemisphere. It's WMBR Cambridge. And we have been talking in the studio with Mark Camp from Cultural Survival, and on the radio phone network with Tino Recinos of the Community Radio Network in Guatemala. I don't know if my co-hosts here have any final thoughts or would like to ask our guests for any final thoughts. We have a couple more minutes.
I guess one thing that I want to talk about is the importance of community radio. Like, Guatemala is a country where not a lot of people are educated. They don't go to school. You know, not everyone has a television in their house. So the impact that this community radio has is huge. And which also, you know, makes sense why the president or the major radio corporations would like to play a big role in this. But yeah, no, I think what Cultural Survival and what these community radio stations are doing is amazing. And yeah, I hope that our listeners will understand that as well and join the movement. Mm.
Yo solo quisiera decir, dice Jasmine, enfatizar la importancia de esa red de emisoras comunitarias en Guatemala, porque es un país donde la mayoría de la gente no tiene televisor en la casa, no tienen cómo accesar a mucha información, como así quizás es. Pensamos aquí, no, ah, vaya, pues uno no tiene dinero, pero tiene su televisión al lado, no, y es un país donde muchos no han tenido acceso al sistema educativo tampoco, así que para muchos sí es una fuente importantísima, y queremos reconocer y saludar no solamente a usted, Tino, sino al trabajo que ha hecho Cultural Survival, y que sigan pues con el trabajo que están haciendo, y le felicitamos.
Hombre, yo antes de cortar quisiera felicitarlos y agradecerles por este espacio, y aprovechando que está Mark Camp, director de Cultural Survival para Guatemala, también felicitarles y agradecerles por todo su apoyo que nos han dado para lograr ese objetivo, lograr un día que las radios comunitarias puedan ser reconocidas dentro del marco legal. Ahora también decirle a toda la audiencia de este medio de comunicación que también necesitamos de mucho apoyo técnico para fortalecer muchas más capacidades a nivel de los proyectos comunicacionales de radio comunitaria en Guatemala, y todo apoyo que venga en función de seguir promoviendo nuevos valores en las comunidades desde las radios comunitarias será bienvenido también. Pues un gusto haber estado con ustedes, y ojalá en una oportunidad podamos estar y poder compartir algo, otras cositas que quedaron en el aire.
Exactamente.
Y muchas gracias.
So Tino is just saying he'd like to thank us all, especially Cultural Survival and Mark Kemp for all their support, and that we'll have to have another talk again sometime in the future to sort of continue with some of the things that we didn't even get a chance to get to on today's phone conversation. Thank you again to everybody, and you've been listening to Sferio, and stay tuned for Music for Human Beings.
مرحبا. Yes, مرحبا في Music for Human. I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran. And dear, oh dear, how I welcome you. Music for Human is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. And I am joined today, firstly, by Dr. Zina van Hoechen.
Hello.
Zina, welcome.
Thank you. Hello.
Dr. Van Hoechen is an expert on neology.
Indeed, particularly Marxian neologism.
It's so good to have you again, Dr. Van Hoechen.
It's wonderful to be here.
Van Hoechen is a German name.
Yes, Pfannkuchen. It means a pastry. It's also called the Berliner. If you recall your President John F. Kennedy, when he went to Berlin, he made this famous faux pas saying, "Ich bin ein Berliner." That was actually what in Berlin we would call a Pfannkuchen. It has a slightly different shape outside of that region, being more flat than round. But in any case, it means a cake cooked in a pan, because that's how it is made.
It sounds delicious, and let me say that it, I think, is an excellent description for Dr. Van Hoechen's work and also her character.
Thank you, I agree.
We're also pleased to have once again with us George, the Mayan shaman. George, welcome.
Thank you, it's wonderful to be back.
George, of course, is from Mexico.
Close, Guatemala.
Guatemala. And Mayan shamanism is on the rise.
It absolutely is. I help the New Agers find their way when they've had their fat cells rearranged.
Well, it's good to have you with us, George.
Thank you.
And we're also joined by the amazing Lilith, the sorceress. Lilith, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Lilith also is here with her four silent but deadly slaves or servants. Or
servants, yes.
Her entourage who remains silent but is always there.
Holding my hair, of course.
And we also have with us, beyond the glass, Aurora. Aurora, are you there?
I am.
Aurora is a vocal specialist.
I'm a vocal therapist.
Welcome again, Aurora.
And welcome to you as well, Dr. Jalis.
Aurora, how have you been?
Oh, I've been amazing.
Are you now well adjusted from your excursions in Australia?
Most definitely. My spirit has folded itself into the Boston-Cambridge area and is resting now in the warm arms of the people, and it's a wonderful network of minds that are meshing together in the air.
And this enmeshedness, do you find that you are trapped there? Because, you know, sometimes I find these meshings can be sticky.
Yes, they can be sticky, but if you allow your mind to flow within them as if they are a medium, a mode for your mind to travel through distances and through people, then it is quite easy for you to just be enfolded into this plane, so to speak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And where do you see this enfolding going?
Future-wise or plane-wise?
Yeah, future-wise.
I see myself as a point in the stillness of time, and that it is not where I'm going, but what is happening in the current time frame that will spread out throughout the ages in a constant fluidity.
A fluidity, but not without its ripples, without its whirling eddies.
Of course, a pond without its whirling eddies would be quite boring.
It would not be a pond, it would be a glass.
Exactly.
Well, it's so good to have you settled here with us.
And it's great to be back. I must admit, my travels were incredibly enlightening, but it is good to be home and to allow my chakra to relax.
And, you know, one of the great things about having a home and finding a place is being able to leave, to be able to travel. Because the nomad, you know, everywhere he stops, that is home. And so, you know, he's always stuck there.
Well, in a sense, for the past year, I have been a nomad. I've traveled all across the world and stopped in various areas with no means, and just made what I could for myself as a home. And it's just such an enlightening experience. It's so wonderful to learn to rely only on oneself and what one can do with one's hands and mind and spirit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I must say, you have no idea how many people come to Sorceress, or to myself, Lilith, actually, and ask for a minimalistic potion, some kind of amalgamation of different chemicals that would force them to become more simplistic and minimalistic. And I must ask, how exactly did you find this without being chemically based?
Well, in my vocal therapy, I see the same thing quite often, that people are laden with stress, which leads to cracks in the voice and stuttering. And it's quite easy. Once one relaxes one's mind and allows oneself to stop thinking about emails and Twitters and, social internets or whatever they're called, and just allowing oneself to settle into this sort of view of the now being the important thing, and feeling themselves connected with the world, it just becomes so easy to let everything go and to just think about, I need to eat something now because my body needs to a certain amount of sustenance, and my mind needs a certain amount of sustenance, mm-hmm. and to meditate. Because without all of these other concerns, one has so much more time to meditate and relax and to just feel yourself mixing with the world and becoming one.
I couldn't agree more. In the shamanic practices, we try to entice people to come back to the earth and to forsake these things, such as Twitter and Facebook, and to just enjoy that which is around them in the immediate environment. And it tends to dispense with the technological ADHD that seems to plague our society at the moment.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, I think attention is like a circular thing, and it wraps around. So one who is alone, or who has a few connections among other people, he may wish to be better connected, but then he finds that he is plagued by prayers. And I think this is a common problem with demigods, which is why there are so few demigods. At some point, one becomes so well connected that one achieves a serenity, and it is like being alone again. It's an ability to let the volume of these voices diminish at will and become like the bubbling of the stream, and thereby not be so disruptive. One could easily imagine that a demigod might not get much sleep because they are constantly plagued by the many thousands of prayers that they are able to hear constantly.
Well, I found that immersing one's head in water reduces the background noises. I mean, sound does travel better in water, but somehow it's in a more fluid sense, and it blocks out the meaning and just allows you to feel the emotion.
So like an alternate sort of more mobile solution would be to wrap a wet towel around one's head and thereby just dampen out those psychic wishes that everyone is sending in.
Exactly, and if one has a pitcher of water, it is also helpful to just pour it over one's head as well.
Just pour that water and one can visualize that these confusing feelings and the angsty desires sort of wash away, and much to the delight of the now wet practitioner. And Aurora, I wonder if there was, as Lilith mentions, was there some guide that introduced you to the concept of the, what should we call it, like the
I believe it's called the water cure.
The water cure. Was there someone who introduced this to you so that you could cure yourself with water?
Well, to be honest, it's something that I stumbled upon myself. I was in the Black Forest, actually, when I began to feel a burning sensation all across my body, and my mind was buzzing, and it was actually quite overwhelming, and I felt stinging sensations all over my body, and my mind was buzzing with all of these feelings and emotions and fear, and I just dove into the stream that was running next to me, and my head instantly cleared, and the twitching, burning sensations all across my body, the stinging pains dissolved.
Now, Aurora, I must ask you, are you 100% certain this was not element-based? This wasn't fire that was actually interacting with your body?
Well, I had no fire at that point. It was, to be honest, I was sleeping in February, and I was attempting to do so without any outward sources of warmth, to just try to keep my body warm with the minds of those around me and with my own internal fire.
But through sorcery, it could have been induced, certainly.
Yes, but I have little to no experience with such matters.
No, I think from an outside source.
Ah.
Well, you mentioned the Black Forest. That is quite a popular area to practice.
Yes, I can imagine so. I didn't meet any human point along the way, but there could very well have been some outside influences acting upon me. But I do feel, I mean, this was in the middle of a meditative session. I was most probably met with an antagonistic mind, or a set of antagonistic minds that lit my body and mind, into flames.
Were there many eddies in this river?
It was very smooth, to be honest, remarkably so, as in the formation looked like it should have a waterfall, and the water just flowed over the rocks.
And you were completely immersed?
I was completely immersed for a few minutes, and then I remembered that I cannot breathe underwater.
I have found that when someone reaches the point of actually turning blue from drowning, when they reach this moment of thinking that they will die, making peace with God, that it induces a certain sensation of peace, the moment of accepting death through drowning specifically, and that when one is then pulled out of an eddy or pulled out of turbulent waters or even smooth waters, that first breath, it is like a new lease on life. And so there's something particular about the ablutionary effects of water, as well as the near-death experience, that I think produces this very peaceful state.
I do wonder if there is an elemental characteristic to water that is not possessed by water derivatives such as syrup, so that one could perhaps envision a syrup cure. Aurora, have you experimented with other fluids, syrup or antifreeze or perhaps grain alcohol?
Well, of course, certain honeys, unruined by sugar, unadulterated by sugar, just plain honey made from nature's bees has very medicinal effects. However, also cough syrups can have a very calming effect. Or Listerine, but I tend to stick with the more nature-based substances.
Like oil of olay.
careful. I've never ingested oil of ole. That's a very
now,
good suggestion.
I'm sorry. Ingestion is actually part of the water cure, or is it dunking?
Oh, yes. No, one must immerse their entire body inside and out in the water.
Have you performed this on others or just on yourself?
I have performed this on others when vocal therapy hasn't reached a very good effect. Usually, if I do it without warning, the effect is much better. So I have installed a large tub in my office.
Like a trap door, so that a student may be, in a moment, immersed completely within, you know, submerged entirely. And how many of the students that have gone through your institution have been treated to the water cure?
At this point, it's only been 3, but the results have been amazing.
So the others that have been submerged still have not emerged, so to speak.
Sorry?
The other students that you have had, or patients, I'm not sure what the term is, but those that have been dunked still have not graduated, or left, or been cured.
Well, 2 of them left my office immediately, to be honest, and never came back. But through outside sources, I have learned that they are doing immensely well. Their stress levels have almost disappeared completely. And the 3rd is still with me in my therapy sessions, but her problems are of another sort, which I can't discuss, actually, on the air.
Do you think this could have more to do with a holistic sort of issue rather than simply the vocal problems, because being
definitely much more
dunked in a vat of Listerine could possibly have more of an effect on your body than simply your vocals?
No, it's not at all reduced just to the vocal area. This is actually a last resort that I apply when just vocal therapy by itself isn't working. See, vocal therapy by itself does touch upon the whole body. If any of you sing, it's an incredible experience that involves every single inch of your body.
And many involuntary muscles as well, right? This is much like breathing or just staying alive. We are made alive by these involuntary processes that we don't consciously think of. And then when they're being threatened and shut off by being dunked in water, then I think that we start to have a greater appreciation and realization of some of these involuntary muscles.
Yeah, precisely. That, I really appreciate both of these points. I'm myself a transdermal mediator, so my specialty is the skin, but like my purely scientific colleagues, you know, one must be aware that the body is holistic and that you cannot cure the skin very often without curing other things. It's not surprising to me that the water cure must be completely experienced.
I'd like to get back to a point that Aurora made earlier about food, as I think food is another medium through which cures may be distributed to people who are finding that they feel alienated in our current society, and that the process of meditative eating or consuming and chewing food, not as consumption, not as commodification, but in meditatively chewing until there is nothing more in the mouth except for a taste of nothingness,
mm-hmm.
then that can really cause some introspection in the subject.
Now, and extreme mastication.
Extreme mastication.
Now, I understand this is a traditional approach in many New Age circles, but the real analog here is something that it's amazing that many teenagers, especially teenage girls, I see them on the streets practicing this without realizing. They buy these sticks of bubble gum and they just chew them until they are powder, which I think requires an immense sort of dedication that is rarely seen by their adult counterparts.
And as a Marxian, I would have to emphasize that this is really about production in terms of the production of saliva, and that this is not an action that is fruitless, as some might say. They might say that this is just the most extreme act of consumption. But it's actually about a productive act that is inherently related with the body and the membranes of the body. And this production of saliva can actually be a very intense and important experience for the subject.
But then to what end is the production of intense saliva necessary? I mean, is it exclusively towards the production of thought, deeper thought and understanding as you masticate?
I think that in late capitalist society, that the production of saliva is actually an excellent metaphor for where we can find meaningful labor, that any kind of wage labor or salaried labor, that these kinds of acts have become so alienating that the only kind of production with which the body, that the individual subject can find meaning is through the production of saliva, through their own body and for their own purposes.
So an economy actually exists there.
Yes, a salivating economy.
That one can be aware of and participate in and come at peace to. And then this ultimately becomes a microcosm for the worker's greater existence.
Yes, and I appreciate another teenage practice of swapping saliva, which we can read as a kind of microeconomy and a moment of resistance against capitalism, because even though there's a slang term of swapping, it's not a kind of crass bartering as from early modern Europe, but mm-hmm. actually a real kind of sharing, moving beyond putting a monetary value on people's bodies and actually questioning, like, what is my body, what is your body? But mm-hmm. but we're engaging in some kind of mode of interaction which is not mediated by capitalistic exchange.
Well, and Doctor, I have to ask you, I've recently read an article in a publication that stated that the act of chewing gum has gone up exponentially almost since the economy has dropped dramatically. Do you see any correlation there? Or
I think I haven't read that article. I'd be curious to hear what kind of numbers there are on that. So I can't speak to that issue specifically. But if I were to speculate, I would think about what place food has in a recession economy versus an economy of excess, and that I think that there have been some superficial and trivial but much talked about changes in certain spending and consumer attitudes recently that make consumers think more about what they are eating, what they are consuming, and that maybe they are not spending as much on food, and that this is a substitute for eating actual nutritious foods. Or it may be that this is, I would hope that this is maybe an indicator that there are more people who are trying to experiment with alternative modes of economy and to move towards a less capitalist-based economy through a saliva-swapping economy.
Mm-hmm. But then would you not think that this is also, in some respect, leading into that walling ourselves off from society that we talked about? Because, I mean, this focus on mastication as opposed to actual meals, which traditionally in human societies has been a major part of socializing and cultural exchange, that's sort of on the decline. But if mastication is on the rise, and then things like Facebook and Twitter are on the rise, people, despite having all this sudden connection with one another and interaction, are still feeling more alone because there's too much of it. And then if you're just sitting by yourself masticating and you sort of have this kind of isolated microcosm of yourself and your own economy, do you think that there's a correlation?
I see what you're saying. I am picturing somebody who would be sending a text message saying, "I am kissing you," and then at the same time chewing some gum. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can see the act of chewing gum or whatever is in their mouth as not necessarily a displacement. I mean, it is a displacement, but it's a productive act. That if one reads that as a kiss, then it is one. And we don't have to necessarily say that that's something to be lamented. I don't think that it's productive or useful to look at the past nostalgically, but rather to see how can we move forward.
Well, may I interject here? The problem I have with masticating without any consumption is that consumption is, in effect, mixing oneself with what one is eating.
Mm-hmm.
And the gum, it just goes away. It's thrown away.
It eventually leaves. I mean, now I know the one possible conclusion of the gum chewing is the swallowing, which is the conclusion of many mutual mastication exercises as well. But before we carry on forward too much in our solo mastication, let's throw out the number and see if we can masticate with some of our listeners. The number is 617-253-8810. Caller, welcome to the air.
But what is masticate?
Masticate, Robert, is to chew. To chew. As like to chew gum or a large piece of beef or whatever is available.
Hey, in the case of horses.
Fingernails.
Fingernails, yeah. One could you know, chew one's own fingernails or a partner's fingernails. It's really all about, you know, what you find.
Proper grooming.
Yeah, well, perhaps not. But I recently met a man who had saved... You know, this is, again, a matter of production. He saved all of his fingernails. And,
I chew mine to pieces.
So they completely disintegrate.
Freud actually indicated that this was an example of the oral fixation.
I'm sorry, the oral fixation.
Yes, Freud wrote that chewing one's fingernails would be a prime example of someone who is fixated in the oral stage or the first stage of child development.
I use it as a defense mechanism against the vibrations of cars.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. That's very Freudian.
And then the other stages, the more developed stages?
Well, the second stage would be the anal stage, which is associated with sadism. That is someone who is maybe an age of 2 or 3 who's first beginning to control their bowels. That one who is stuck in that stage or has regressed to that stage, that they are emphasizing controlling everything around them rather than a give and take or kind of well-adjusted full person that they're... I mean, this is Freud. I would. This is not my own perspective here, so I want to create some kind of distance from that. But it's... I'm just trying to define the terms we can produce new ones.
And we're, of course, here open to any viewpoint that anyone might have, but... I mean, the logical conclusion one would take from Freud's description of the oral and then anal phase would be that a more well-adjusted adult than our caller here would perhaps chew his fingernails with his bottom.
Well, he would more likely try to control others and their fingernail chewing.
He would impose
on them a regime that would allow or disallow fingernail chewing at certain times and would attempt to regulate and control to an extreme degree the actions of others.
Mm-hmm. Often his own mouth?
Perhaps, or through intermediaries.
I once had a patient who compulsively chewed his wife's fingernails. And I tried to turn it into a sort of positive outlook thing that he was consuming his wife's fingernails in order to become more of a part of her.
Mm-hmm.
That they were becoming one slowly through this consumption of her dead protein matter.
And what effect did this have on your patient's voice, Aurora?
Yes, well, the difficulty was that he was swallowing them whole and they would scratch all the way down. And his voice became very hoarse.
Yeah, and you know, back to the Freudian view there... It occurs to me that if my interpretation is correct about the chewing the fingernails with one's teeth and then later with one's bottom, that this may also explain why people so rarely regress back from the latter stage to the former. That's very unlikely that one would chew one's fingernail with one's mouth afterward.
Hmm. Well, and then, of course, the final stage would be the genital stage, in which, you know, this is what Freud uses as to signify the fully well-adjusted human, is that you realize that the true source of pleasure is through genital stimulation and not through anal or oral stimulation. Of course, there are many criticisms of this, ranging from, you know, just from feminist criticisms to queer theory criticisms that would put these in a very delimited context that I don't think necessarily applies widely.
Yeah, I'm not sure. See, once again, Freud was, if I may say, not really with the New Age program, and he was not very spiritually aware. So, you know, I feel like...
Well, I think he was very interested in the God phenomenon, the idea of God as something secreted from the brain, perhaps.
But he was not a subscriber. He was like the man who watches everyone around him drinking water, but persists in drinking orange juice or battery acid or some other unsuitable substances, and then claims to be an expert on water. We have a lot of psychologists who write in to the show and tell us that that what we are saying is promoting a ridiculous form of thought, which is a defense mechanism, and the this and that. But, you know, just as we would be skeptical of the spiritual practitioner who was ignoring science, we must also be skeptical of the scientific practitioner who ignores all of the spiritual enterprise that is occurring constantly around them.
Well, I find it strange, but many scientists seem to be very attacked by the New Age, by our movement and our idea that we are one with one another in our spirituality. They seem to feel like it is...
And it seems like, especially from Dr. Pfannkuchen's perspective, that it is inevitable that we are converging to a single unified whole, that we will all sort of enter this together.
I don't mean to indicate that. I think we are currently experiencing a state of fragmentation, of a subjectivity that is fragmented in the modern society, mm-hmm. in late capitalism, and that... I don't want to make too many predictive statements at this stage, but holism is one option of many, but we don't necessarily know. But getting back to this point of science versus spirituality, my field, I come from Marxian political economy, and certainly many of my colleagues find my appearing on this show to be ridiculous for a materialist to be part of a spiritualist program. It seems like a contradiction to them. However, at the heart of any kind of Marxian analysis must be dialectics and the engagement of materialism and spiritualism, clearly part of a dialectical program. So I see that engaging with the spirituality of materiality and the materiality of spirituality to be part and parcel of a Marxian project.
I really could not agree more.
I have nice fingernails.
And see, now, this interests me because the conventional wisdom is that they
would... I think they're chewing gum in a little girl's mouth.
Would you scratch with the fingernails? Is that part of their utility for you?
No.
So you have no use for their original function?
What is that? Yeah, scratching? Is that... Yeah, I don't really...
Scratching or picking up small items.
I went a while without getting any mosquito bites, and then I got a bunch of them.
And, I mean, were you equipped? Were you well equipped with the fingernails? I'm an older person, and I've experimented.
I could scratch if I had to, I mean.
I have experimented with removing them wholesale, which, you know. If it's done properly, I know it sounds painful, but it can be a holistic experience also, a gradual lifting of the nail from the bed.
Wholesale? Like take off your whole fingernail?
Yeah, precisely.
That would be weird. I think that would be, like, not very good. Sometimes if you let your fingernails grow too long, they chip.
Yeah, well, when they're gone, they don't chip. They,
Caller, I must ask if you think what our host here is saying is incorrect, then why do you bite yours? Because then they're non-existent except for the quarter of an inch tiny shell they have over this.
You think that it wouldn't hurt to not have fingernails?
Well, but does it hurt you?
I think that an excess of fingernails is also painful.
If you like hit your hand or bump it on something, I think it would hurt a little bit more.
It was more sensitive initially, but eventually the skin grew more like the skin on the inside of my ear. So certainly not where I would like a bumblebee, but not a problem for playing the piano, for instance.
So wait, you there's no way you don't not have fingernails.
No, they grew back, Robert, obviously.
Oh, I lost a toenail one time, like, fully, and it hurt. Like, it just, like, ripped off. I didn't like it. I thought you did that on purpose.
Did it hurt you physically or metaphysically?
I don't know. Maybe I just thought it would hurt because I didn't have a toenail. But I think I like bumped into something. This was like years ago.
No,
like I ended up just like ripping it all off because it was just like it was weird.
Well, so no. My experience was that I had joined a small brotherhood, and one of their requirements was that not only did I have to remove every hair from my body, which in my case was a long experience and a search, but ultimately I also had to remove all of my fingernails and all of my toenails. So I, you know, over a period of many months, I would lift each nail off of its bed and soften the skin and prepare it for its birth in a way, in a real way. Because like my scalp, you know, none of these points had been exposed to the elements for any period since I had been born. And it was like birth, painful at first, but then I found joy there.
That's really beautiful, the fact that your entire body was open and vulnerable.
It was. It was really, really beautiful.
In our past of the ancestors, we also had a practice of removing fingernails, but this was more, it was a physical and a metaphysical experience, but it was something even greater, if you can imagine. We would take the loser in some kind of a conflict and have their scribe's fingernails removed such that the history or the future history would be erased. It couldn't be written, and then those who were not triumphant, those people who we destroyed, were completely erased from society and
history. I have a question about destroying people.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying that social networking is not very good, like the internet.
Well,
you were kind of maybe not putting it down, but I was thinking, in society, to get through this society, I myself have to go to a working place that has set boundaries, and sometimes I think a certain way, and I don't particularly, like, oftentimes understand what most people are thinking. And really, it doesn't apply anything to what I'm doing
mm-hmm.
as far as what I get paid for and my interactions with society. So I was thinking that, I was wondering if it was required to have those sites on account of what everybody has to say is pretty much meaningless crap, and words are just, like, a tool that people have adjusted to.
Well, first of all, let me throw that number out again so we can get another voice here with us. It's 617-253-8810. So maybe we can also participate in this social connection enterprise. Hello, Facebook or Twitter, you are with us now.
Yeah, I've been talking for about 3 hours now. I have, you should check out my Twitter. It's www.twitter.com/AndyMilonakis. And right now what I'm doing is I'm giving away free t-shirts to everyone who sends me naked pics of them. And so far we've gotten 4 responses, all of whom are dudes. So it's been a great fundraiser, and I'd really encourage you to do that because you sound really hot. And so do your co-host.
Thank you, Andy. I'm sorry, the name again.
I don't know.
Well, I think this is a beautiful example of how horrible society can become with social networking. As instead of meditating to view others on the spiritual plane, they are attempting to view them on a physical plane through email.
She sounds hot. What's her name?
Well,
I find the phenomenon of sounding hot to be fascinating because hot is generally associated with the visual. And
yeah, I can visualize your throat is really round and cavernous.
Well, I think the caller is referring to a basic form of synesthesia that occurs everywhere, this unification of the senses. That,
yeah, I'm on acid, so that makes sense.
Well, not really. So the point is there that in some characters called synesthetes, there is actually a conscious experience of one's voice as being pointy, for instance, not as a metaphor. Actually pointy. And
can you buy that on the street, like synesthete?
Unfortunately, no. But my theory is that we are all experiencing this, but on a subconscious level. So our caller, who unfortunately due to an immaturity and a lack of personal interaction, who looks in this way.
I think this show is crap, and talking in general is crap.
Well, you know...
But you choose to talk on your social website?
Do you want naked pictures of me? Shit, like...
Nope. I think that we're heading into a kind of race to the bottom, an impoverishment of discourse. When we say talking, we don't mean this kinds of, like, twitting and twatting around. But rather, the engagement critically with language and the history of words and the production of new words for the purposes of critique and moving our society forward to create a better society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we lost both of our callers, unfortunately. But in any case, my view on this whole social networking phenomenon is not that it's necessarily wrong or bad. It's just another point in that circle that at some point we will become so well connected that we're going to return to simply being alone. That I will be just as connected with, you know, the person across the street as the person across the river, as the person across the planet, and this will bring me, I will feel close to no one. I would feel only close to myself in a unique way.
My clients tend to feel that exact way when they come and see me, and they feel that they're both overly connected and completely isolated. And I'm under the impression that they feel they will find themselves without this isolation if they connect to the earth and all of its terrestrial processes again. But then in being more connected with themselves, that they will have a more meaningful connection with other people because they know themselves.
I must say, whenever I'm on the London Tube, because I'm in London quite a bit, I've never felt more around people, but never more alone. It's a very strange, strange feeling for me.
I think that we can call these two disparate phenomena of being very oriented towards others, even very far away, as well as navel gazing. We can call this glocalization, that is both a kind of globalization where, as Dr. Jalas was describing, you can connect to someone on the other side of the world, but at the same time, what you're describing is what you ate for breakfast this morning, and that this extreme localization to the point of isolation and navel gazing, as well as this reaching across the world, we can call glocalization.
Glocalization.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like that portmanteau, this idea of becoming so connected that we're lost.
But the connection is so shallow over social networking. I mean, especially for those who have meditated on a more spiritual plane and who have touched others to mind.
I mean, Aurora, my view is that this is a limit. So at the moment, I'm experiencing with... or it seems to me that I could experience with anyone the sort of connection that was common between me and someone, you know, five streets over in the village, that I would only receive snippets that were filtered through some noisy medium. And in those days, it was the medium of repeated tellings. But eventually... Now I have a greater connection to these people, and I have that old connection with someone much further away. And eventually I feel that it is inevitable that we will become, able to experience one another's brains in a physical way through some electronic brain device. And this is around the corner. It is inevitable. It must happen. Let me throw in the number one final time. It's 617-253-8810.
I think that that technology can facilitate the kind of nomadic subjectivity that Aurora was talking about at the beginning of the show. That is, one can be connected but also be disconnected, and that this kind of glocalization, what falls away is the nation state, that we lose connection with nationalist sensibilities and with the idea of the nation or the state, and that we can really be more true to ourselves as well as connected to others, regardless of differences.
Let's connect with someone else now. Caller, welcome to the air.
I don't know. I feel like I was like trying to get some serious advice from your radio show.
Uh-huh.
If politics, as far as like, I think that everybody should be able to do whatever they want, to a large extent.
Very libertarian.
And I go to these places, and I'm completely being like I cannot fully put myself forward in the world, and I'm forced to have an income of sorts, and if I want to survive. And I want to stay around in the area where I was raised. If I want to survive anyways, you can't run away from the economy completely.
I agree. I think it's important to question for yourself in your own life what structures produce these conditions of possibility.
So anyways, I have no problem with this lower class job working systems, like just doing standard tasks for a little amount of money. But every job, I've probably had five, I'm 23, I've probably had five or more jobs. And every time, I'm always questioned about what I do, and what I do in life, and really what I am. Everybody wants to know what everybody else is, and really, it's not really nothing to be.
Understood. So, Robert, what you are saying is that you do not fall inside some well-established role. There is no box labeled Robert, you know, the whole person that you can label yourself as.
Well, there is, but I would say there is a whole person that is me, but I cannot put that whole person into society because, quite frankly, if you can't even, this probably all would come. Like, I would say that I smoke marijuana. I don't want to say that on the air. I think that I would say that LSD helped me, and like psychedelic drugs helped me get over a lot of the stuff that had me be a lot of problems. And like, this whole society is bogus, and I'm getting like, I don't know. I don't care to be a part of it. Like, I would rather go to jail than like.
Robert,
really
you
abide by these confines.
You have some beautiful points, and I'd like to interject here. Sorry for the interruption. And that you don't need to fall under a certain label, and you must be happy with yourself and not worry about what others are questioning you about. I mean, you are not your job.
Yeah, and, well, I think, Aurora, that another point must be made, which is that, there. I think Robert is frustrated, and that's clear, and he desires to, you know, I wonder if, Robert, you've considered moving to a more, a state where people take care of each other more, so that that there isn't this labeling, for instance, and that you can just live if that is what you'd like.
And because no man is an island, you can't exist in the midst of society by yourself. It just isn't feasible, and you disappear or.
Well, everybody is always interacting all of the time.
Certainly. We're all relational beings. We're social beings. And Robert, I would say that what you've come across is very important, and I think that you should hold on to that and cultivate that frustration, but don't just allow it to be internally oriented. Orient it out. When someone asks you what you are, ask something back to them. Say, what are you? why would you label me? Mm. And actually make this a real question and not just a way to put you down.
Or even, you know, simply and reflexively, I remember an elder in my village who would say, if he were asked a question, I can just imagine him saying, if you had said, you know, who are you to him, he would say, well, a translation is difficult, but one might say, do not concern yourself with who I am. I know who I am. Do you know who you are? And generally, the questioner would leave satisfied that he would not receive a better answer.
But Robert, the worst thing that you can do is expel negativity around in the environment. You have to rise above this, and at least you're asking the important questions, but the most important thing for yourself is to not fold into the society and to stand and be a part of it.
And the reality, Robert, is that this is not just an individual frustration, but this is a class frustration, and that the history of struggle in society is a history of class struggle, mm-hmm. and that there are other people like you who are in a similar socioeconomic situation, and that you may be able to connect with them.
Well, Robert, I'm sorry to have to do this, but we're out of time.
Okay.
But hopefully we will hear from you next week.
Thanks for the words asking people, questioning other people is a good idea. I should have had that. I would have made it better. Cool.
So I'm afraid we're having to say farewell to Lilith the Sorceress, who has been with us for these past 3 weeks and who will not be joining us again. So I'd like to, if we could, do a clicking farewell to Lilith and her train of 4 servants. Excellent. So all health in your future journeys, Lilith.
I will. I'll be sure to call in from around the world. There are so many other people to help out there.
And so, of course, thanks again to Aurora.
Namaste.
And to George.
It was wonderful to be here.
And to Dr. Van Kuchen.
Solidarity.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here at WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge on Music for Humans, New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you, with you Fridays at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'a salama.
Safety.
Number 1.
Cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number 2.
Look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number 3.
Cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four.
Cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians in unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice. Be legal. Be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge